Welcome to Unity Fort Worth Online. We are a spiritual center of love and wisdom, affirming God's presence in our lives and reaching the larger community in ever-increasing circles of good.
Gets me in a nice soulful mood, which is the mood you need when you're talking about Zen, which is one of my favorite topics to discuss anyway, this idea of being in this moment without worrying too much about what's going on each side, because that's the disease of the mind, as they say, is the idea that them and us, this and that, are always comparing one with the other, yeah? And if we turn on the TV, we go on Facebook, we listen to politics, it's all about that. And we even bring it, shock horror, into our own lives, right? It's the dualism of the world. Even though we're in unity, we still live in duality a lot of the time. Anybody hung out in some kind of dualism this week? I think I did. And, you know, you've got to ask ourselves, why am I doing this? Am I doing this to enhance the good for all beings on earth? Or am I doing to score on another person? You know, because I don't feel good about myself, they're not going to feel good, etc. So all these comparisons. And Zen really is the antidote to all that. Zen is breaking through the way the mind works. Because, you know, the mind's okay, the brain's fine, but it's always sorting and comparing and analyzing, and we can't get to solution that way, not to a true spiritual solution. We have to take it down from the head into the heart place, yes, to get to that intuitive knowing place. That's the Zen moment. That's the Zen place. To me, Zen and unity are the same thing. It's the idea that I'm in that place of harmony, of release, of the moment, not worrying about anything else at that particular moment. I'm just present to what is. One of the great Zen masters, Dogen, he wrote this. He said, and he's writing back in the 11th century, he said, the Buddha way, we could say the Christ way, the Buddha way is basically leaping clear of the many and the one. Many and the one. So it's not a question of, well, if I could just overcome all the many crazy things that are going on in my head and discover oneness, I'd be free, right? It doesn't work like that. You know, you rush off to the desert island where everything's perfect, right? What happens? Your worries take the next flight in, don't they? So you can never just phase out into oneness and I'm in bliss all the time. No, it's a question of leaping clear of both the many and the ones. Get the difference there? It's not like there's some kind of solution. When my ship comes in, all will be well. No, it's not like that. It's living in the now, but with a different attitude. If we can leap clear of both, see, of both apparent opposites, of the seeming problem and this illusion of a solution, and simply know that we self-create our own problems and our own solutions, the reality is something wholly different. It's the third way. It's the middle way that is totally different from all the things we normally think with our conditioned minds. I love Zen because ever since I was a kid, when I read my first Zen book, I thought, oh yeah, that's it. And it really impelled me into unity because Zen cuts to the chase, you know. It's not about religion. It's not about philosophy even. It's about a way of living. And in fact, that's why we're talking about this. The title of this message is Everyday Zen, because there is no other kind of Zen, right? Unless it's working for you in your everyday life, it's not Zen. Zen is all about how do we live effortlessly in our everyday lives. My first book that I read on Zen was by Christmas Humphreys. Now, I want that name. That is a great name, isn't it? Christmas Humphreys. He was a Christian Buddhist, and he founded the Buddhist Society in London. He was a judge by trade. That's what he did for a living. But wrote all these books on Buddhism and Zen. I remember reading them and thinking, wow, that is cool. Cool stuff. And then later on, I listened to Van Morrison, and Van Morrison says, as I was reading my Christmas Humphreys book on Zen, I thought, yeah, I'm up there with Van. We're both reading Christmas Humphreys. Anyway, one of the great patriarchs of Zen from right in about the 6th century in China wrote this. Again, talking about leaping clear of the many and the one. He says, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, which I do, probably all do, then hold no opinions for or against anything. Now, that doesn't mean we don't have choices and I prefer a certain thing to eat and you prefer something else, right? That's okay. It's when I say that my food is better than your food, right? Or when I say my political opinion is infinitely better than yours, then we got a problem. But when we see that, hey, there's room for all tastes, to set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. When the deep meaning of things is not understood, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. Do not search for the truth. Only cease to cherish opinions. I love that. In other words, don't worry about trying to find the truth, because if your head's trying to push and find the truth all the time, you'll never find it anyway, right? Just cease to cherish opinions. Now, what's the key word there? Cherish, isn't it? Cherish opinions. You know, hey, I can have opinions, but am I cherishing them? Am I giving value to them? Am I making them be a part of, you know, this is who I am. I'm a steak eater. You know, I'm not actually, but say I was. I will eat occasional steaks, but my wife is a steak eater, okay? And I like other stuff, but that's okay. She's not wrong because she likes steaks, is she? Hell no. I mean, hell no. We live in Texas. Yeah. I might be the one that's wrong because I like hummus and stuff like that. So it's not the thing. You can enjoy what you enjoy, but don't make it, you know, don't have a sign in your head that says I'm a steak eater, you know. If you don't like steak, you're going to hell. Makes no darn sense, does it? There's so much we can let go of if you think about it. When you think of all the things we cherish and hold on to that really aren't necessary, if we could just get rid of them, it would open up a whole lot of time and energy to do other stuff, wouldn't it? And that's what Zen is all about, taking care of business in a beautifully effective way without worrying so darn much. And worry takes up a lot of time in most of our lives, unfortunately. After Christmas Humphrey's book on Zen, I read Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind by Suzuki Roshi. Again, another seminal book, awesome book if you've never read it. Wonderful stuff on how to practice Zen in everyday life. And then I came across other great masters like Dogen and people like that. And the emphasis, of course, is on meditation. That's what Zen means. In Sanskrit, dhyana means meditation, right? When it was taken from India to China, it changed, the name changed from dhyana to chan, which is the name that the Chinese give to Zen. And then when it got to Japan, it changed to Zen. So it's the same word. It basically means meditation. But meditation is not just about sitting in meditation. Meditation is being present to what is at any given time, yes? That's the larger kind of meditation. So wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you have opportunity to be present to what is, which is being, in my mind, in meditation, right? It's taking it from the mat. So we need to do the discipline of the mat, but more important is the discipline of just being present to each other on any given moment. Another thing in Zen that's quite common is the koan. We've all heard of these. What is a koan? Know what I'm talking about? A koan. It's a puzzle or conundrum, isn't it? Like, for instance, what is the sound of one hand clapping? Now, start flapping and see what you come up with. Now, you can be thinking about this for weeks. You know, what is the sound of one hand clapping? And you can't work it out in your head. In fact, that's the whole idea of a koan, is to help you explode, right? Explode beyond the discursive reasoning so you enter into another way of thinking. Because you can't work it out intellectually, can you? What is the sound of? What was your original face before you were born? That's another one. Get your head around that. Wrap your head around that. In other words, it's direct pointing. Who are you? Are you this, or are you something more? And in that case, what is your original face look like? Maybe you don't have a face. I don't know. But the point is to move beyond just accepting reality as just three-dimensional reality. There's more going on, right? Schrodinger's cat. We're all familiar with Schrodinger's cat. Some of us are, right? You know, it's Erwin Schrodinger, we're great physicists. In order to explain subatomic physics, the fact that we're both particles and waves at the same time, did an image of a cat in a chamber. Cat's locked in a chamber. It's got food and everything. It's going to be okay. But it's also got a poison pill in there that at some time in the future is going to be released and the cat will die, right? But because the chamber's sealed, we don't know if the cat's alive or dead until we open the chamber. And he said, that's the universe that we live in. You know, the cat is both alive and dead at the same time. We are both particles and waves. Now, the minute you look in there to see if it's a wave, it becomes a wave. If you're looking for a particle, guess what? It becomes a particle. But until the time that you look at it, and it's both, right? And that's the nature of us. We are both and. We are both the many and the one, but we're neither. We're not limited to either. We are in the middle, in that balanced place. But our minds want to tinker all the time with a box, don't we? We want to open it and examine it, and we murder to dissect, as William Wordsworth says. You know, we dissect and analyze, but in the process, the patient dies because we've been thinking too much about things. How many people this week have been thinking a little too much? In fact, driving yourself nuts. This is what happens. By the way, did you hear the one about Schrodinger went to the vet? And the vet told him, he says, I have good news. And I have bad news. Ho, ho, ho. Bodhidharma, he's an interesting man. Bodhidharma. You know, the Chinese don't grow a lot of facial hair, so they have wispy hair, if anything, on there. And they don't have big beards, the Chinese man. But Bodhidharma came from India, and they are heavily bearded people. And so whenever they draw a picture of Bodhidharma, he's got this big old beard. And he was he's a hipster, really, from way back when, you know. And he went over the Himalayas, so he was also a mountain man. So he's always pictured as a big old, he rode on a buffalo, I think. Anyway, he brought Zen. Interested dude, man. A lot of these people no wonder in the 60s and 70s, when the hippies went to India, we felt so at home, because it's like, they've been hippie for 3,000 years, man. Whoa. Cheech and Chong are already over there, man. Anyway, Bodhidharma, getting back to Bodhidharma, big old hairy dude, he came over the mountains, and he described what Zen was like. Well, when I read this, I think this is unity. This is what we're attempting to do, too. It's, first of all, it's a special tradition. We are special in unity, aren't we? Oh, yeah, very special. A special tradition outside the scriptures. In other words, we don't have to slavishly believe in the inerrancy of the Bible or any other scripture, right? The scriptures are wonderful, but they point to something within us. They're not the thing itself. So a special tradition outside the scriptures, no dependence upon words and letters. No dependence, right? You can't rely on a word. You have to feel it as a living reality in your own heart, correct? Direct pointing at the mind, because the problem is not the problem. We are the problem. And to change the nature of the problem, just change your mind, right? Isn't that a unity principle? Thoughts held in mind produce after their kind. Seeing into one's own nature and the attainment of Buddhahood. So where's the finger pointing? Always, isn't it? That's the Zen teaching, and that's the unity teaching. Maybe that's why I love Zen and I love unity, because they're teaching the same thing. You got to do it, though, by yourself, as they say in Texas. By yourself. All right. Here's one. Master Gutai raises a finger. Again, we can all identify with this. Anybody raised a finger this week? You know you have. You're not going to admit it right now. You may not have done it physically, but you have done it metaphysically. You've raised that finger some way, somehow. Yeah, come on. You can own it now. Yeah, you did it in a lovely way, though, that people only realize later what you've done. Wow. Okay. Master Gutai raised his finger. And I think it was this finger he raised, by the way, in this particular story. Master Gutai raised his finger whenever he was asked a question about Zen. Okay. A boy attendant began to imitate him in this way. So when anyone asked the boy what his master preached about, the boy would raise his finger. Gutai heard about the boy's mischief. He seized him and cut off his finger. Ooh. Now listen, no child was hurt in the creating of this story, okay? Purely symbolic. Just like no animal was hurt in the making of this movie, same idea. So, heard about the boy's mischief, he seized him and cut off his finger. The boy cried and ran away. Yeah, I would too. Gutai called and stopped him. When the boy turned his head to Gutai, Gutai raised up his own finger. In that instant, the boy was enlightened. Now, often these stories end with, at that moment, he was enlightened. You know, something happened. So what happened? Imagine it in our own lives. You know, the master's teaching something, and what are we doing? We're mocking it, or we're imitating it, or mimicking it, but we're not really feeling it, because only the master can do that. That's his teaching. You can't just imitate, right? And so what does the master do? The kindest thing he could. He cuts off the finger. Now, it doesn't sound very nice, but it's saying, get rid of that thinking. Don't try and imitate. Be your own person, right? Do your own thing. Be authentically you. You can't just imitate somebody else in life. You've got to be you, right? You are worthy to be you. Well, the kid's upset. And I would be too. But then the master shows the finger. Now, what happened then in that moment? What happened for that little boy? He realized something, and it's hard to put it into words because that's why it's Zen, right? You cannot put it into words, you can just feel it to be true. He felt like, wow, that was worth losing my finger because now I've gained the whole world, right? Before I was pretending, now I see the reality of it. I have to be me, right? And even if he spent the rest of his life without that finger, and a finger is not a literal finger, a finger is all those silly things we do to pretend to be instead of owning our own truth, right? And allow it to be. So this week, if you find a finger anywhere, give it a decent burial, okay? It's okay. It came to pass. It wasn't meant to be there forever. Here's another one. Two monks were arguing about a flag. The flag is flapping, said one. No, said the other. The wind is flapping. The argument went back and forth. The master happened to be passing by. They asked him, which is flapping, the flag or the wind? And he said, not the wind, not the flag, your minds are flapping. Good one, huh? And that's so true for all of us, you know. It's getting caught up in it. Because you kind of think you can work out the conundrum, can you? Is the wind causing the flag to flap, or is the flag itself in some way flapping? Or it's certainly an interaction. It's the one and the many again. But trying to work it out and saying who's right and who's wrong, crazy! So you have to acknowledge it's my mind that's doing all this, so I can let it go and just enjoy the flapping of the flag. You know, no matter how it came from. Am I a particle? Am I a wave? Yes. Don't try and pin me down, right? The minute we pin ourselves down, we tie ourselves to the ground, don't we? Life is not so much fun anymore. A couple more, and then I'll ask a couple of questions. Master Rinzai said, "When hungry, I eat. When tired, I sleep. Fools laugh at me, but the wise understand." Now, can it be that simple? It's the old chop wood, carry water. Before enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. You do what is yours to do. But it's the attitude you bring. Listen, a chore can be desperately deadening, can't it? Or it can be joyous, depending on what we bring to the party, how we approach it, right? We have the power within us to enjoy every single thing. And when we're totally there with it and enjoying it for what it is, it's fine. The minute it becomes tedious, Brother Chi Singh was on my radio show doing a pre-record, which will go out in August. Remember him? He came to the church about a year ago. Wonderful man. He's a Christian Buddhist, but he's been dealing with cancer in his face and his head for a year or so. It's very serious cancer. But still teaching, still doing some wise, wonderful teaching in the Zen tradition, really. And he was sharing on the show that he's talking about his students, and he said his students were going to go on a retreat. So the week before the retreat, they're all excited about the retreat, and they're wondering how it's going to be, and, oh, I wish I could be there already, and et cetera, et cetera. They're so excited, they're not really present to where they are. Okay, they get to the retreat. It's not as good as they thought it was going to be. The food's not so good. It's hard meditating all these hours. I don't know if these teachings make sense, et cetera, et cetera. I wish I was home. Okay. They're home from the retreat. Oh, I feel so bad about not getting the most out of the retreat. I should have loved it more. I should have really been paying attention. The food wasn't that bad. What's happened? We missed it all. We missed it all because we're totally always looking forward or looking backwards but not being present to what is. Not simply when I'm hungry, I eat. When I'm tired, I sleep, right? Keep it simple. Enjoy the moment. That's why I don't like planned fun. You know, have you ever tried to plan some fun? It's going to be great. It's going to be wonderful. Oh, Lord. Doesn't work out, does it? The more you plan it, the more it goes south, it seems to me. And a couple more, and then we'll ask those questions. Master Rinzai again, he says he was fond of asking, what at this moment is lacking? What in this moment is lacking? Well, what is lacking is always not this moment, but the thoughts we attach to the moment, right? About the past or the future again. If we could just get down to the simple moment of being present right here, right now, as the song is going to say in a minute. What? Nothing's lacking. It's only the additions we feel required in our minds to add to life as the simple, beautiful, elegant thing that it truly is, right? So if we could just let go of all that, and just be in this moment, we have an opportunity to live a different kind of life. And then finally, this one. Once a monk made a request of Master Joshu. "I have just entered the monastery," he said. "Please give me instructions." Seems reasonable. Master Joshu said, "Have you had your breakfast?" "Yes, I have," replied the monk. "Then," said Joshu, "wash your bowls." The monk had an insight. Didn't get enlightened that time, just had an insight. But hey, that's not bad. So in other words, you've had something, do the next right thing, right? Just take care of business. That's enlightenment. It doesn't matter about all the abstruse doctrines and all the various things that we have to take on in our heads. It's very, very simple. When you've had your breakfast, wash the dishes and go on from there. So, question, what are we going to take into our week now that's kind of Zen? Well, how can we live in our workplace with our spouse, with our partner, with our friends, in our relationships in general? And not just in our head. Don't go there. Go somewhere into the integrated place. What?
How about?
Yeah. run your thoughts through your heart. Okay, ask yourself, is this a helpful and necessary thought right now, right? Is it for the benefit of for all concerned? Because if it's not, don't go there with it, right? How about what? If I'm not enough with myself in my moment. Right. Are you saying you're not enough? Right. Because where? We want to be with somebody else?
Who knows?
Self-acceptance. Yeah? Do without thinking. How'd you do that? Okay, just do something natural. Be natural. Throw away expectations, okay? That it has to work out a certain way, right? I'm okay with the mystery, as the song says. Just be naturally yourself. You are worthy, right? You're okay to be exactly as you are. Everyone is. Because if we weren't, zap, God would have said, you're not worthy, I'm taking you. The fact you're here means you're okay. Yeah, gone. God loves us unconditionally, allows us to be here, so it's okay, we're all right. Excellent. A couple more, and then we'll let it go. Right. To take time apart and rest in that place. And to know that that place of stillness, of retreat, is where we are also, right? It can be possible right in the midst of all the craziness. That stillness is here, right? That contacting that place within myself. So practice it this week, every day Zen, you know. Have those moments where I'm just flowing naturally. I'm letting go of all the extraneous details. And I love that idea. Take what you're thinking down into your heart. Check it. Give it a heart check. See if that's really for the benefit of all. And if it isn't, just release it, you know, because it's not going to benefit us or anybody else. And so much of what goes on in the world is based on comparing and analyzing and putting somebody else down at somebody else's expense. And really, that's not necessary. That's not going to enhance who we are as beautiful spiritual beings. For a Zen sermon, I've said more than enough, so amen.
Thank you for listening. This ministry is funded through the generous contributions of individuals just like you. If you have found spiritual enrichment here, please visit us online at www.unityfortworth.org and make a donation. We thank you for your contribution and affirm with you, divine love flowing through us blesses and multiplies all that we give and all that we receive.